secularism, even when it's legally strong, even when it seems to control the commanding heights of academia, it's humanly weak because it cuts against basic human impulses and desires and aspirations.
New York Times columnist Ross Douthat speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
And it's also weak because people keep having intimations that the world is more than just a bunch of atoms clashing together. And so the religious impulse always makes a comeback. And in that sense, it isn't a question of whether you're going to have a secular or a religious public square. It's a question of what kind of religious public square you're going to have.
You can listen to Ross Douthat's presentation, Making the Case, Why the Public Square Needs Christianity, on a recording from our 2019 Making the Case conference. We'll send it to you along with a recording of Advent and Christmas hymns for a year-end tax-deductible contribution of $300. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Planned Parenthood agreed that the words on the video were the actual words of the Planned Parenthood personnel. They agree to that statement. You remember in public, they've been saying, oh, deceptively edited. When push came to shove in court where you need evidence, they meekly conceded that, yes, we said all those words.
If you want a divorce for any reason or no reason, you will always get what you want. You will always get divorced. And you can't think of any other civil dispute where you walk into court and you know in advance which side is going to win.
Many pastors who get in trouble have not been able to get the visitation thing going. And it's so vital. It's so parallel to what our Lord did, what St. Paul did, what pastors in the New Testament do.
Wisconsin turkey producers love Issues Etc.
A headline in yesterday's New York Times, how a divided left is losing the battle on abortion. It's a massive story, kind of a combination of circling the wagons and shouting charge at the same time on the part of not only the abortion industry, industries like Planned Parenthood or groups like NARO Pro-Choice America, but also the Democratic Party. Why is there this happy marriage between abortion advocacy and the Democratic Party? Why is it that the Democratic Party's candidates, both nationally and locally, seem to be becoming more strident in their no-holds-bar support for abortion on demand? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Back live on this Monday afternoon, December the 2nd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to start our conversation with Katie Glenn talking about a New York Times column, how the divided left is losing the battle on abortion. She's Government Affairs Counsel for Americans United for Life. A little bit later, we'll discuss a new study on cohabitation with Peter Sprigg of the Family Research Council. Then we'll continue our series introducing the books of the Bible today, 2 Corinthians. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest. You can join us with questions or comments or call in number 1-877-623-MY-IE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And our Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about a New York Times column titled How the Divided Left is Losing the Battle on Abortion, Katie Glenn, Government Affairs Counsel for Americans United for Life. Katie, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
The New York Times story notes that in just 6 months, Southern and Midwest states have passed 58 abortion restrictions. Why is the pro-life cause seeing these successes now?
Well, first I'd like to point out that Idaho, Utah, and Wyoming also all passed laws, so I think we can say that they passed in the West, too. These 58 laws passed across 22 states, so I think the framing of this being a Midwestern, Southern thing is incorrect. There are pro-life Americans across all of the states. I think that we really see drive from legislators to pass the laws that they want to see on the books in the event that Roe v. Wade is overturned. That's becoming something that feels more and more inevitable on both sides, whether you think that's a great thing or a terrible thing. And legislators are really motivated to pass laws that will have the abortion regulations that they want to see in their state while they feel like these are going to be upheld in the court.
The headline in the New York Times makes it sound as though perhaps the left is divided on the issue of abortion. Are American progressives divided on abortion?
Absolutely. In fact, the divide here really is the voters and the everyday Americans versus Democrats running for president. If you only listen to those candidates, you would think that every single person who identifies as a Democrat in this country wants abortion on demand all the time for any reason. And we know that the numbers don't bear that out. In fact, nearly 80% of Americans, including pro-choice Americans, those who support abortion, do believe in common sense health and safety regulations, and many of them believe that abortion should be restricted in the third trimester. So there's very much a divide, but it's not between Democrats and other Democrats. It's between American citizens and politicians.
Many of the abortion advocates quoted in the New York Times piece say that the abortion lobby had grown complacent under the Obama administration. Is this true? And if so, why?
Well, I think that to some degree there was this feeling from abortion advocates, especially those in Washington, that this was going to last forever, that there many of the problems they had identified could be solved through the Obama administration or through what they expected to see the Clinton administration. And all of a sudden, as they mentioned in this piece, suddenly we have President Trump, and they realize that, in fact, states had a great deal of space to pass regulations on abortion, and that even the majority of Americans weren't with them on extreme laws.
What is the abortion industry doing in reaction to President Trump's election, his policies, especially his manning of the federal judiciary and changing the complexion of the Supreme Court?
Well, we see a lot of noise on Twitter, and, you know, as much as we celebrate all of the pro-life laws that passed this year, unfortunately, several states passed very extreme pro-abortion laws. If you look at the law in Illinois, New York, Vermont, the comments from Governor Northam in Virginia, and now Virginia has introduced a similar law for 2020. So they are mobilizing in state legislatures in a way that they really weren't during the Obama administration.
You mentioned before the Democratic presidential candidates. How, as far as we can we tell, have they responded to pro-life legislative successes?
Every time any of these candidates get a platform to talk about abortion, it's just extreme, on demand, and up to the point of birth, or even after that, if they agree with Governor Northam. So it's really unfortunate to see really only Tulsi Gabbard, the only candidate who has expressed any type of belief that there should be a restriction on abortion.
How do you account for this, Katie, the fact that across the board, this still large slate of Democratic presidential hopefuls all essentially singing from the same page in the hymn book on abortion?
Well, they mentioned in the article, you know, after the Alabama law passed, one person donated $1 million to Planned Parenthood. Ariana Grande, the singer, had a concert benefiting Planned Parenthood. So I would say it's kind of a follow-the-money situation. If Planned Parenthood is one of the biggest Democrat donors out there, and they have this huge following on Twitter, you know, candidates kind of feel like they need to fall in line. Even the Democratic Attorney General's Association in November put out a statement saying that they're not going to support any candidates for attorney general across the states who do not full-throatedly support abortion. So you can understand why, especially in a primary, candidates feel that they are beholden to those types of interests more than they are to the actual voters.
Is a party platform on the other side that includes a very clear advocacy for the unborn and the protections of the unborn, is that a winning strategy in the 2020 elections?
Well, we sure think so. It seemed to be in the Senate in 2018. Certainly, it was a winning strategy for President Trump in 2016. And across the states, especially when compared with the extreme rhetoric, Americans are rejecting that. And they are supporting legislators who want to protect the unborn. I think that's something that the New York Times really missed. They make it seem like legislators who are passing these pro-life laws are doing so because they're nefarious, because they're just out for themselves, and not because they're responding to the will of their voters, which is what they're doing.
The New York Times piece also points out that there is a disconnect between national level abortion advocates and local abortion providers. Tell us about that.
Well, one of the things that they talk about a great deal is, especially related to fundraising, you know, in Alabama, Planned Parenthood is raking in millions of dollars after this Alabama law passed, and yet an abortion clinic in Alabama is barely able to keep their doors open because they don't have that kind of a fundraising machine. So I think when people in states feel like they're being pushed by special interest groups on the coast, that could be a source of frustration, and that certainly comes out in this piece.
Katie Glenn is our guest. We're talking about a New York Times column titled How the Divided Left is Losing the Battle on Abortion. She's Government Affairs Counsel for Americans United for Life. When we come back, what are Planned Parenthood's political goals?
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Do you want your neighbors and community to see what you're celebrating this Christmas season? Why not display an outdoor nativity in front of your home or your church? It's a great way to show others what Christmas is all about, the birth of our Savior Jesus Christ. Check out the Outdoor Nativity Store at OutdoorNativityStore.com. Durable, affordable, and American-made nativities, OutdoorNativityStore.com. OutdoorNativityStore.com.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
Ed Crusum offers Bible-based, Christ-focused Christmas ornaments in various sizes for church and home. Use our Jesse Tree collection to teach your children this Advent and see our new premium ornaments, a crucifixion tableau, angel and shepherds, the Holy Family, Epiphany, and much more. Visit adcrusum.com for unique and theologically sound greeting cards, jewelry, gifts, churchwares, banners, certificates, and housewares. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about a New York Times column titled How the Divided Left is Losing the Battle on Abortion. Katie Glenn is our guest, Government Affairs Counsel for Americans United for Life. With the advent of December comes a new Issues, Etc. book of the month. This one is a children's book, kind of a call and answer book. It's called Angel, Angel, What Do You See? It's aimed at emerging readers, those kids that are just learning to read for themselves. It's a great Christmas book from Concordia Publishing House. You can find out more about it right there at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House and order Angel, Angel, What Do You See? For your child, grandchild, or godchild, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Katie, one of the criticisms leveled within that New York Times story of Planned Parenthood is that they are too obsessed with their political goals to pay attention to those small abortion providers we were discussing before the break. What are Planned Parenthood's political goals?
Well, it certainly seems to be a continuing internal struggle for the organization. That is certainly part of why Dr. Leanna Wen was ousted as president of Planned Parenthood this summer and part of the ongoing public debate between Dr. Nguyen and the organization was about whether it should be focused on providing healthcare, things like screenings and preventative medicine, versus being a political arm of the Democratic Party. And it was clear that she lost that fight, as she is no longer employed by the organization.
What did we learn about Planned Parenthood during that, her very brief tenure, and then that very public exit?
Well, it just seems that if Planned Parenthood's goals differ from the Democratic Party's goals, then the healthcare side is going to fold for the political side.
What is the relationship then between Planned Parenthood and the Democratic Party? How would you describe it?
Well, in the article, they detail that Planned Parenthood whips up volunteers for Democratic campaigns. They donated money to almost every Democrat in Congress, and they've certainly put their thumb on the scale in local elections as well. You may recall that there was a conflict a couple of years ago when there was a pro-life Democrat running for mayor of Omaha, Nebraska, and some of the national politicians and organizations were refusing to support him because of his pro-life stance. So they've definitely weighed in on politics more than, say, the local clinic in Alabama.
It appears that, at least at the national level, the Democratic Party's decided to make unrestricted access to abortion both a litmus test for its candidates and a prominent feature of its platform. Why do you think the party has now dropped all pretense of moderation on the issue of abortion?
I think that there has been some decisions from the leaders in Washington and in New York that there's just not room to compromise. There's not room for multiple opinions on this issue. And that's a real shame, because we don't see that in all of the states. Some of the states that pass the most pro-life legislation, like Louisiana and Arkansas, are doing so in a bipartisan way. Their legislators are not seeing this as a political issue. They're seeing it as a human rights issue and something that very much transcends party.
Do you think that this strategy is likely to hurt some vulnerable Democrats?
Absolutely. I mean, look at members of Congress already coming out against Congressman Dan Lipinski in Illinois. He's got groups as diverse as SBA lists, local Democratic groups campaigning for him, and yet many of his colleagues are gunning for his seat. So I think that for Democrats in more purple districts, or even Democrats in red districts, the purist mentality of the National Party is going to hurt them.
I have never heard, and I believe that this is probably true, Democratic presidential candidates talk as much about abortion, both on the stump and in nationally televised debates and things like that, as they have been this year. What can we expect to hear from Democratic presidential candidates and other politicians running up into the 2020 elections?
Well, I know that there is at least one more town hall scheduled on abortion ahead of the Iowa caucuses, so that's not going away. And I think it's interesting that in Iowa, there's currently a Democrat running to challenge Congressman Steve King, who has said, he's on the record as saying, you know, we need to be open to people's ideas here. We can't be purists about abortion when it comes to this issue, in part because he's looking at that district in Iowa and saying, the voters are not going to go for abortion on demand here. And if you look at in the recent gubernatorial elections, it was the same thing. In both Louisiana and Mississippi, both of the candidates, the Republican and the Democrat running for governor in those two states, were pro-life. And in one state, the Republican won in Mississippi, and in one state, Louisiana, Governor John Bel Edwards, the Democrat, was reelected.
It just sounds to me like they obviously have good polling data. They obviously have smart people advising them, but it looks like they're cutting off their noses to spite their faces.
It kind of seems that way. We look at this as something that has the ability to be nonpartisan. We are happy to work with anyone, Democrat or Republican, who supports life from conception and wants to protect it under the laws. And it doesn't seem like the Democratic Party feels the same way.
It is reported, and also in the New York Times story that we're discussing, that Cecile Richards, the former president of Planned Parenthood, has formed a new organization called Super Majority. Can you tell us anything about it?
Well, I hadn't heard about it before this article, so I guess I'm not the demographic they're advertising towards. But it sounds like, you know, they're trying to take a lot of Democratic Party platform items and shove them all together, which is sort of what got Planned Parenthood into this mess in the first place, was getting away from what they called women's health care and doing all these other things. So it will be interesting to see how they do, but I very much doubt that they will obtain a super majority of Americans with the extremist platform that they're taking.
What should our listeners know when they hear that rhetoric, women's health care or health care, as the framing for the discussion of abortion, especially when coming from the advocates of abortion?
Well, I think that Title 10 really teaches us a good lesson about this. Title 10 is a program that provides preventative health care, pre-pregnancy services, has nothing to do with abortion. And when the federal government reaffirmed that this program had nothing to do with abortion, Planned Parenthood pulled out of it. They walked away from tens of millions of dollars because it was to be spent on pre-pregnancy health care services and not abortion. So, I mean, they're speaking volumes through money on what they want to prioritize, and that is not health care, it's abortion.
So, in essence, despite the rhetoric, they said, if you're going to give us money, federal government, through Title 10, it better be for abortion and not for any other form of quote-unquote health care.
Right, or at least for health care and abortion, not only health care.
We're going to hear the presidential candidates repeat the mantra that this is about supporting women, strengthening women, giving women a right to choose, and strengthening women's health care. How would you respond to those claims about abortion on demand without restrictions, which is the position of most of them?
Well, I don't think that it helps women to harm their children. One of the women quoted in this article said, if all we do, I'm quoting her, quote, if all we do as an organization is pay for abortions for low-income people, we are eugenicists, close quote. And I could not agree more. To say that women need abortion or families need abortion to succeed is incredibly insulting. As a millennial woman, I completely reject it. And I think that in this article, they make mention of pregnancy care centers providing diapers, providing other type of health care, providing shelter for women in need. And they say, oh, maybe we should start doing that too. That would be great. That would be a great use of our resources to provide women with help, not with the way to end the life of their child.
Katie Glenn is Governmental Affairs Counsel for Americans United for Life. You'll find a link to Americans United for Life on the Talk on Demand Archives page at issuesetc.org. Katie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Peter Sprigg joins us on the other side of the break. We'll talk about a new study on cohabitation. Most Americans believe that cohabitation is practice marriage, that it will strengthen the prospects of their coming marriage, or that at least it won't do any harm, and that cohabiting couples can raise children just as well as husbands and wives. Is any of that true? We'll see what the social science says after this.
What if your mother gets Alzheimer's, Wesley? And because she has Alzheimer's, you're not able to do as much writing as you used to do or as much traveling for public speaking as you used to do. Don't you think she should have a duty to die?
Wesley Smith, speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
I went through that very thing. And hell no is my answer. Hell no, my mother didn't have a duty to die. I had a duty to take care of her. That is a Christian duty. And it's also a human duty. And if we ever lose sight of that fact, the duty to die will be the least of our problems.
You can listen to Wesley Smith's presentation, Making the Case for the Hippocratic Oath, on a recording from the 2019 Making the Case Conference. For a year-end tax-deductible contribution of $300, we'll send it to you, along with a recording of 15 Advent and Christmas hymns. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
College Preparation Station is proud to announce the opening of its first Missouri location, Creve Coeur. College Preparation Station provides ACT, SAT, PSAT instruction, and college scholarship guidance. Their new Creve Coeur branch is located at 11,500 Olive Boulevard. Learn more at cpsprep.com or call 314-750-5967. College Preparation Station in Creve Coeur, Missouri, and Maryville, Illinois. cpsprep.com.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at lutheranpublicradio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season, LutheranPublicRadio.org.